Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. A little late, I was chopping avocados. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I've been eating prosciutto for a couple of days. The prosciutto was on sale at the grocery store, and oh my God, is that good. I didn't remember that a good prosciutto, you have the true rind of the pork at the outside of it. You have the actual skin of the pork that was left there. Most of the time when you buy those in grocery stores, you have the meat part. You have a little fat layer that's below the skin. But the one I bought, it has the whole skin of the pig. And oh my God, does that do a difference? The taste of the pig skin is absolutely awesome. It has a very different taste than the rest. It has a deep earthy flavor. It kind of tastes dirty, and there's nothing like it. Salted like this, dried for years. Silver Spider says prosciutto. Yes. Oh, I'm having allergies now. Just the pleasure of biting into that unchewable part of the prosciutto is absolutely amazing. I think it could be the only thing I get to experience in life, and I would be satisfied with my life. It's like you chew the fat part, you chew the meat part, but there's a little line of pig skin that is much harder. Reminds me of the oreilles de Chris québécoise. These kind of pig skins, deep fried pig skin bits. And there's always the outside part that is more tough, that is more tough to chew. Oh my God, prosciutto, absolutely amazing. Speaker's Corner says, Filipinos love pig skin. My neighbor always barbecuing and stewing pig skins in many ways. Yeah, that is absolutely awesome. I've been buying a couple of pork bellies recently, and if you leave the skin on, it has such a taste. If you cook it properly for a long time, it's eatable, and oh my God, is it good. It's more than just fat. Below the skin, you have just fat. But the skin itself carries such a taste. It's amazing. Someone was asking about men. Before that, Dead Star was saying Kick Founder paid all of the big streamers to exclusive on his platform. People like Ice Poseidon, if you know that community. Yeah, and it's a very sad state of affair of the streaming world. I understand the business interest of these guys. They become big and they want to cash out on it. And one of the easy ways to do so is to not develop a supporting base that actually is willing to pay you that much. And it's to jump to sell yourself to platforms contractually. Do a little bit like Joe Rogan has done with his show. And you sell yourself to a big platform that wants to acquire you. It's not my view of what was interesting with the internet, because re-centralizing media control is not the way to go. It's never going to lead to anything interesting. It's all going to be like, okay, when you follow a streamer, you are carried with that streamer to whatever platform he can benefit from. And by arriving to a platform and demanding so many millions of dollars, inevitably it's going to drain on other streamers. The whole idea of YouTube and when it was great was that it was a free market. Anyone could start streaming and anyone could rise if they were interesting. You don't get this with these deals because first, the initial streamer is centrally controlled. His creative genius will be impeded upon by the central demands of the platform. Secondly, the initial streamer becomes a parasite of any future streamers. They now all have to chip in as part of their percentage fees or whatever they pay to the platform, so that Ice Poseidon can be paid for. I really don't like this model. Dino Logovic says, catching up on 2x speed, I missed the prosciutto segment. Yes, you totally missed it. You're going to have to rewind. Bad Monk says, JF, have you ever tried carnivore diet? It is the optimal diet for most humans. I'm not crazy about it, but most of the time I have kind of a carnivore diet. But to me, the way I live it, carnivore diet includes potatoes and milk and milk products. So there is never a time in my life where my diet didn't include copious amounts of cheese. So I can't say that I have gone for the true carnivore diet, but I think that the principle of the carnivore diet, I live by it every day of my life, which is don't eat broccoli. And that, most of my life, I've not eaten broccoli. Like, if you were to calculate the amount of time I've spent eating broccoli in my life, it's probably less than an hour. And, you know, I don't eat green beans. I don't eat the green stuff. Dead Star says, I like the carb fuck up diet. Carb the fuck up diet. Okay, that's the name of a diet. Someone was asking about the male mind, and I'm always interested at educating women about male cognition, because the reality is, when you speak to women in your private life, they don't believe you. It's like, oh yeah, no, we don't necessarily remember our dreams. I can't believe you. I've just had a dream. And it was like my uncle, and my uncle was doing this, and I was doing that. Don't you remember your dream? No, we don't necessarily remember our dreams. It's only in certain situations where we have been woken up during the dream and we were really shocked by the dream that perhaps we're going to remember it. But most of the time, if we don't have an active remembrance of it within the first few seconds of waking up, it's going to go out of our mind. Because dreams are fucking useless. Of course, it's not useless to you, woman, because you can tell your dream stories to people and therefore test just how long they're willing to hear you telling a story that is absolutely fictitious and that has nothing to say, that has no point to it. I can understand the functional aspect here. You want to test us for our resilience at listening to stupid stuff coming out of your mouth. But we are operating on a totally different basis. Anyways, all this to say, when you explain to women male cognition in the couple, they think it's a lie. They think, oh, you're just making this up. No, but when you are on social media, certain women are interested at hearing about it. Question for men. My mom, who has been married to my dad for over 30 years, just found out that my dad constantly scans for, assesses and plans for possible threats. Men, do all of you do this? I don't know, you guys can answer in the chat, but as far as I'm concerned, yes. Yes, every angle of attack is considered. Distance from any stranger to us or our loved ones, disadvantageous positioning, outnumbering risks, features of the terrain, at all times, like a programmatic loop. John Drake says, I do. New Guy says, duh. Yeah, I think there's a general unanimous response. We are situationally aware. And yes, we can make decisions based on this. We can decide not to go shopping at a particular place of town in a particular timing at a particular time. Yes, it plays a big role, and it's an important aspect of our life, and there's no way to stop this. It is in our nature. Danielle has a funny meme. That is a funny one. Canadians are mad that India assassinated that guy because only the government is allowed to provide healthcare in Canada. That is a joke. You have to understand two aspects of Canadian culture to get that joke. One, Canada, there is a monopoly on healthcare, so the state controls healthcare. And secondly, in Canada, you can receive assistance in dying, the MAID program. And so, I think that that's a very good explanation. That's why the Canadians are mad at India assassinations, because that was healthcare. And we believe that healthcare should be given by the government. Martyr Mad has some thoughts. He says, periodic reminder that in 2023, we live under a regime that pushes experimental child castration, instructs teachers to deceive parents to groom kids as transgender, and in many liberal locals is threatening to kidnap and castrate the kids of parents who resist, classifies as terroristic threat parents who protest teachers exposing their kids to straightforward pornography, uses every available lever of power to force other countries to kneel to the rainbow flag, is abetting an unprecedented invasion, a number of migrants equivalent to the population of Seattle streaming across the border every 3 months, is prosecuting the opposition presidential candidate for imaginary crimes while actively ignoring stone-cold proof of the current president taking bribes, is sentencing people to decades in prison for a rowdy protest on January 6, months after cheering on the destruction of cities by Antifa and BLM, had, according to Time magazine, rioters on standby to be activated by text message the night of the election in case Trump won. The truth is, the regime and its supporters are not thinking in normal political terms. Since 2016, desire to persecute and harm their opponents has far outweighed every other consideration. Liberals like Tulsi Gabbard, Glenn Greenwald, and Matt Taibbi have been tagged as enemies for the sole reason that they didn't hate half of the country with sufficient intensity. Because how much you hate the other half is the only thing that matters in the left in 2023. They will burn the whole thing down just to see the look on your face. Wow, that is a beautiful description of the current times. That is exactly what's happening. I mean, this is the opening paragraph to a dystopian novel, but it's it also turns out to be reality. It's amazing when you think about it. But that is the current state of the American political system. Silver Spider says, the typical leftist response to this is always, this is very rare and almost never happens, and the Republicans are just fear-mongering. Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, it was rare at some point, but definitely you've been working at making it less and less rare. So who knows where you stop, you know? Who knows where it stops if you've been working so hard that at some point the trans and identifying people represented less than 0.01% of the population, and now it's more like it's a large contingent. I don't know exactly the numbers, but it's definitely increased. We've seen it from UK coverage of these statistics. Definitely we have an increase in trans identification. And some even, I feel like this is the week of men coming out. Speaker's Corner says, Jeff, how often do you change your bed sheets? Don't lie. If you're talking about Papa JF never changes his bed sheets unless there is a reason. So bed sheets could, if it was just me, that could be years. Now, when you live in family, you will eventually realize that there is a cycle at which children and women will dirty the sheet for some reason. They will do something, either with food, with urine, with whatever. And so there ends up always having a reason to change the bed sheet, to change or to wash them, basically. So when you have children, you will see that it happens many times a week where you have to you have to put the bed sheet in the washing machine. DK Shadow says, not sexy fun time. Oh, I guess that if there was some kind of sexual activity, and perhaps, I don't know, there is vagina juice or something on the bed sheet, I guess that would be a reason. But that's my point. I clean my bed sheets when there's a reason for it. And on my own, as a single man, there's never a reason for it. Basically. I feel that this is a great moment where men are finally being asked genuine question from women about their mind. And we can finally speak to a receptive entity. Because for years I tried to explain male cognition to women, only to be received by quite some hostility, I have to say. You know, try to explain the idea that males are scanning for threats to a woman, and she's going to not only just find you a little bizarre, she's going to be kind of annoyed. Like, oh my God, you do this? Are you racist in the process? It's like, let me do what my nature tells me to do. You know, you are a female. You do what your nature tells you to do. But here we have a man totally laying out why thinking about the Roman Empire makes sense. It's a meme this week. It's been a meme for a couple of weeks. How much do you think about the Roman Empire? A question by a female to a male, and even Elon Musk has referred to that meme a couple of days ago. Speaker's Corner says, how many pairs of boxer shorts do you own, JF? Probably 6 or 7. And I would say there's 3 or 4 of them that I like. And then there's 3 or 4 of them that are kind of my signal, you have to do a wash. So when I arrive at the least comfortable ones, you know, those that are I've bought them a long time ago, they're not quite my size anymore, or they may have some rips in them. And it's like, when I arrive to that pair of boxer, it's a sign to me. It triggers a hook inside my loop of programming. And it's like, need to do washing machine equals true. That is how it works. So this guy explains it beautifully.
James, do you ever think about the Roman Empire?
All the time.
Why? What are you thinking about it?
Well, because we're in those times right now. Everybody's preoccupied with sports, movies, work, you know.
What was it you said about bread?
Well, all right, the common people... Roman Empire said that everybody was equal. Everybody had a chance.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't. The rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And they worried constantly about people rioting.
Uh-huh.
Because they knew that the common man, the common people, uh-huh, could take over at any time. So they would bring them into the Colosseums. And they would give them free grain. They would give them bread. They would give them wine, whatever they needed, to fill their bellies and block their minds from what they were angry about. They would watch plays. They would watch fights with the gladiators, sometimes for months on end.
Huh.
And that's where we're at right now. And I think about it all the time, because so many people are preoccupied with their favorite football team, their favorite actor, actress, singer, and they just don't even think about what's being taken away from them. As long as their bellies are full and they're happy with what's going on, they just let it continue.
Wow.
I love that this guy is a guy without a t-shirt. He could be a homeless guy, but he comes out very well educated and understanding of these issues. That was a beautiful explanation. Aaron McIntyre says, you don't live in a country You live in a tax farm for a global empire. 60 Minutes discovered the U.S. is financing more than weapons in Ukraine. The government is buying seeds, fertilizer for farmers, paying the salaries of 57,000 first responders, and subsidizing small businesses. Basically, we're running an entire parallel social state there. It's unbelievable. And we're doing so as a kind of reward for the service of being a proxy channel of our hate against Russia. And it's not even our hate. It's the hate of a couple of elites in America. We are making this country live by the standard of living of a socialist European country, basically. Paying for emergency personnel of all kind, and, you know, building their societies for them. That is not looking good for the future, because it's one thing to converge toward a parasitic socialist state that basically is born out of the already existing success of your nation. It's another thing to have an external entity impose the cap of a socialist state over you from the start. I mean, Ukraine was one of the poorest nations out there, probably the poorest white nation out there. And they are now being taken into the hands of the American socialist and American warmongers. That is not a good thing. It's pretty much, there's a parallel between this and what's happening to the black population in the U.S., which is, oh, you need help, you're not doing good. Here, let us help you with money. Now, you shower money, you create networks of corruption, you end up with totally corrupt cities, totally corrupt places in America. You're going to do the same with Ukraine. The same is going to happen with Ukraine. And talking about corruption, Bob Menendez, a Democrat senator, is now under indictment for a system of bribery that led him to accumulate $480,000 $480,000 cash that was hidden in his clothes at home, in bags stuffed here and there. And his comment on this is just allegations. This is money that I was legally winning and that I was stuffing like this because I'm a Cuban. And as a Cuban, my family has faced confiscation in Cuba. And we have to understand that he's been traumatized historically by this. He has been oppressed. And we have to welcome his different style of living in America. As a Cuban, he insists on I don't understand. If you are a Cuban and you are afraid of government confiscation, wouldn't you want to have that money outside of your home rather than inside of it? Maybe he's afraid that the government will take over the banking system, but he's a Democrat. He basically is in the party through which the government would end up doing this. So I don't think that the explanation makes sense. And I've looked at the whole document. I've read the whole document. Look at this beautiful little gold bars. I'm really not in the right job when I look at this. So the whole scheme goes as follows. He has a wife, and he is making that wife kind of her agent, Nadine Menendez, and he is making her interact with Egyptian people. And this criminal case includes everything that I hate about the left in terms of their systematic building of cartels. Because now there was a bunch of powerful Egyptian people, like influential in Egypt for some reason. They needed a senator to act on their behalf to make sure that certain laws would pass, to make sure that they would gain certain advantage, and to make sure that they would personally enrich themselves through these advantages. So you have the Egyptians, they talk to his wife, and his wife tells them, hey, I'm the wife of a senator, maybe I could solve some of your problems. And they end up making a whole scheme in which there's a company in New Jersey that will be hiring his wife and maybe him, or that will be channeling money to them. And it's like, you don't need to do a job. You don't need to do anything. We're just going to send you money. And now they do certain interventions that could arguably have been motivated by the service to this corrupt network. But they end up not getting paid. And that's where the problem comes, because the initial allegations, it's like, oh, well, Menendez would have perhaps put some pressure on certain decisions as it relates to security and allowing the transfer of arms toward Egypt. And as an official in the U.S., he was making decisions on these things, so he had a lot of leverage on the Egyptians. If that was just it, perhaps there would be a problem, because it would be like, can you demonstrate that he was changing his decisions for the Egyptians? But in any case, he was making these decisions, and his wife was updating the Egyptians by email and text. That's another thing. It's like, you're going to make these old corrupt schemes, and you act with less security than Papa JF. You don't even have channels that are anonymous. They have, like, they're operating this whole scheme from a Gmail account, and they're deleting their emails when it's too hot. It's like, bro, Google is all about, like, when the government makes an investigation about you, they will ask for one thing. Give me the history of deleted emails. Now, if they had to sift through your 50,000 emails, it might actually be hard for them to find the bribery. But if they all they have to do is say, Google, give me the 3 emails that JF has deleted in his life. And then it's like, boom, 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 golden nuggets for the investigator. If you're going to do some bribery scheme, you need channels of communications that are end-to-end encrypted, you fucking idiots. I'm so frustrated because the socialists are bad. They're even bad at their establishment of cartel. Like, if I was running a cartel, it would be so radically well managed. Like, it would be like, yeah, you bring me my share now. And it would all be encrypted, and it would all be signed with hidden signatures and private keys. But no, these guys are operating this cartel from a Gmail account. Anyways, so meanwhile, his wife is updating the Egyptians, saying, hey, I got some good news concerning the weapons deal. There's going to be some sniper rifles for you. And so clearly the actions of Bob Menendez in the U.S. were worthy enough for his wife to kind of announce it as a good news to her relationships in Egypt. But then eventually they realized that they're not getting paid the promised money. And the whole promised money was supposed to go through a New Jersey company that would hire these two. Or one of them, and they would say, like, oh, okay, you're getting a salary from us, but you don't have to do anything. So that's basically free money for you guys. Now, there was a problem. The money wasn't coming. And this was a company that had not been generating any income yet. So eventually, they end up having the deal that, okay, well, if you want your bribery money, we're going to have to make some income. And so how about you favor us as the sole provider of halal certification for Egypt in the United States? So they want a monopoly. They want a cartel on declaring some meat halal so that it can be exported toward Egypt. And they get it. They get it through lots of pressures by Bob Menendez. Eventually, the U.S. Department of Agriculture notices this whole monopoly, and they start investigating, and they're like, hey, there shouldn't be a monopoly on this. Like, anyone could declare a meat halal, and it's going to cost more for the consumer. It's going to cost more for the consumer if there's a single company that does it. But Bob Menendez goes directly in his own name as a senator and intervenes to keep the monopoly in. It's really important for the Egyptians and their religious belief. They want halal certification that they can be sure of, and the only company that can do this is this New Jersey company that turns out to be the company that promised him that if he can secure this monopoly, that he would end up getting paid through this channel. So he ends up securing the monopoly. They say in the prosecution that his pressure didn't work on the other officials, but somehow it worked because they kept their monopoly. So it's like the pressure didn't work because the officials told us that he ignored the pressure, but he ended up giving the monopoly still. So you find yourself with, and this is, I'm so disgusted about this religious labeling of meat, because it's always this kind of crap cartel type of stuff. And the Democrats are hand in hand with the companies to fuck the farmers up on this. Because what it is ultimately is a bunch of Democrat-aligned and socialist-aligned companies across the US and Canada who control meat butchery, and who are imposing their own tax, basically, onto farmers selling meat to their customers, because the farmers are forced to pass through these local cartels. And at the end, the farmer gets less money, and the slaughterhouse gets money, and the religious organization that certifies these meat as halal or whatever, they are cashing in. So they had established a cartel. Menendez was happy. And there is a communication in text that I would say does qualify as a veiled messaging of a bribery intent. It's as they celebrate for the victory that they had to secure their halal meat monopoly in New Jersey. One of the partners in the discussion says, oh, that is so good. I think it's going to be very good financially all around next year. So he was signaling to them, you got what I wanted. I'm going to get rich with this monopoly, and therefore I can pay you the money that we had promised you for your corrupt actions. So I think that the prosecution has a case, given that there was such an extent of communication and hidden, veiled language of that kind, I think it's going to be enough to convince a jury that this was all done for corrupt purposes, and that yes, Menendez was stacking this money. Because right now the answer of Menendez is, oh yeah, I had this $480K at home, but I withdrew all of it through, his response is, across the years, I have been withdrawing thousands of dollars from my bank account, from my legitimately earned money for emergencies. But there's a difference here. Thousands of dollars is what he says. You have 40, you have 480K at home. There's a difference between thousands of dollars and 480K. It's going to be very hard for Menendez, unless he can show about 480K of withdrawal within the last few years on his bank account. I think it's going to be very hard for him to show that it all comes from his bank account. If he can show this, he might save himself. But I think it will be hard, because it's very easy to think, oh yeah, I have plenty of withdrawals on my bank account, but when you do the actual accounting, he's probably going to realize, oh shit, there's only $10,000 withdrawal, maybe $100,000 withdrawal. I would be very surprised if all of this money could be demonstrated to have come from his account. And the investigators are going to have various ways to trace this money, because at this point, all the money gets scanned when you deposit it. So there's probably a way for the investigators to know from the serial code of the money, well, this was withdrawn by an Egyptian guy in New Jersey. Isn't it interesting? So they can know a lot. Money is not what it used to be. That's, a lot of people are scared about the CBDC, centrally controlled crypto finances. And yes, you have reasons to be doubtful of this, but let's be clear. Money is already corrupt. Money at this point passes from hand to hand and then to the scanner of the bank. And therefore, you don't have a penetration of the money market by 10 hoops or 15 hoops anymore. You have people getting money and depositing it and scanning it. So at this point, money is basically a paper record of an otherwise digital transaction. So CBDC are not that scary to me, not in the sense that they're not dangerous, but in the sense that the danger is already there and it's already affecting cash. Doubting Thomas says, JF says that he would use private keys for communication if he ran a cartel. Is JF's Bitcoin training us is laying out the foundation for his future cartel when he needs it? No, I couldn't do this. There's way too much public attention on me. But if you want to run a cartel, the first step is don't be a public personality. I made different choices in life, so I cannot operate a cartel. I have to stay by the law, by the book, every day of my life. But that's my nature also, so I can do that easily. We have an epidemic of female police officers just killing people because they mistake their taser for their gun for a taser. And it's like, this doesn't lead to much contestation in the media. When you think about it, when you see how they totally went after Derek Chauvin and made him an icon of racial oppression, it's amazing how relatively easy females are getting away with it. Yes, another one. Another female who pulls a gun instead of a taser. Oh shit. Oh my god. She says taser, taser, taser. Oh shit, I shot him. Well, it seemed to be painful for the arrestee here. I mean, the arrestee had body slammed this guy. And so, again, we are in a case where she may be prosecuted for, you know, careless, erroneous, reckless behavior, and negligence, that kind of stuff. But amazingly, she might not be prosecuted if instead of saying taser, 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 she would have said, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to shoot you. Because technically, the guy has body slammed a policeman. He is within reach of reaching his gun. And so, arguably, he constitutes a deadly threat, you know? And in these cases, the spontaneity with which they admit their error is probably to their disservice. I I wonder where he got shot. Maybe it was in the shoulder. Maybe it was in the head. It's hard to see on this camera. Anon says the best case outcome would be she gets tried, convicted, and well, no, I'm not going to read the rest of this message. Okay. If someone is sending me a video from MDE about female policemen, I'm not going to review this, but thanks for your... I'm a new show, and, you know, something from 10 years ago, I don't know what it is. I don't know the relevance. I'm not going to open it. Here we have a case of hostile behavior in the city against a guy who is trying to play piano to make some money on the streets. I have to say, these guys on the streets are kind of annoying. People have not asked for their presence, and they're kind of spamming the public space with audio. I find them kind of annoying, but not to the point where I would physically harass them, but to the point where I consider their presence to be an impediment generally.
This is one of the worst things somebody's probably ever done to me while street performing. So this kind of stuff happens here and there, so I usually just keep playing through it, but after what's about to happen, I had to stop. This was also the last song of the night, and side note, I do this to see people happy, so please don't harass a person in this video.
He looks like he may be Asian.
And the waitress is practicing politics.
Well, I will have seen every fucking single thing in my life. An Asian singing the Piano Man.
As a businessman slowly gets stoned, you're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking.
All right, a general sense of distraction. She expresses it by destroying the piano. And she steals money from the bucket. Well, that is extreme entitlement. Extreme entitlement, not only to be able to break the annoying device, but on top of it, to reimburse yourself for the damages caused without due process, that is kind of aggressive. I love the incapacity of the Asian man in front of American street life. It's like, Hey, she just like stole my money. Welcome to America, bitch. You know, one of the first time I went to America, where was it? It was some random city. I was going to a conference for neuroscience, and in the hotel room, one of the first American TV program I'm faced with, there's a guy dressed as a kind of a rapper, but like mainstream type of tough guy, thug rapper style guy. And he's yelling at the camera. He's saying a sentence, and he's always ending it with, "Welcome to America, bitch!" And he says, "Welcome to America, bitch!" And oh my God, that is a memory of being welcomed to America by this hotel video with a black guy. That is exactly what this guy is getting. He's getting his welcome message.
You suck, asshole! Huh? Hey, listen, you want to hit him?
Alright, man.
That's what I'm saying.
Christ almighty.
No respect?
So this guy will come and we'll give him a $20 or something to kind of reimburse him and thank him for the music. All right, well, yeah, Street Life, unsolicited air invasion, but also theft. And I think everyone is wrong in this thing. They should all be living elsewhere. Alexander Dugin, what a moving story. The story of losing his own daughter to her attempt at heroic journalism, eventually being targeted by a bomb attack, and the bomb attack kills her instead of him. The story of the philosopher Alexander Dugin. He says, what is there to guess? Dasha's fate speaks for itself. What happened to her is a horror. And what happened to us, it is very difficult to speak of it in philosophical or poetic terms. I believe that Dasha's death shook our people. Dasha has become a national heroine. I meet different people and they all tell me the same thing. Dasha has become the embodiment of our spirit. People who did not know her or me have become followers of her memory. Every man who gave his life for his country is a hero, and his memory is sacred. But Dasha also embodied innocence, which is truly horrible. When a man takes up arms and fights our enemies, that is one thing. Sure, he's a hero, but he can defend himself and fight back. And Dasha couldn't do that. In her diary, about 10 years ago, when Dasha was not even interested in politics, she suddenly wrote, "One day I will give my life for my people, for my state, and I will become a national hero." I mean, a little girl, a very young girl, doesn't say, "I will get married and have children." But she talks about something like that. This is evidence of a certain depth. Of course, I dream that she would have a family, a husband, children, but she wanted to be a heroine. There is a providence here. We don't know, and I can't even accept that. God's ways are inexplicable, and what are the ways in which he leads us to righteousness and immortality, no one can predict. Unconventional wisdom says she would have been safe in the kitchen. Yes, that is something I certainly wouldn't direct my daughters toward political fight of any kind. I certainly I wouldn't even recommend this to my sons, to be honest. It is a sacrifice that that fits a certain type of personalities like mine, but it is not something that I would direct them to. But I don't think that Alexander Dugin necessarily wanted her to do that. I think she rose as a self-interested and self-motivated journalist, largely. And I think Alexander Dugin probably just saw it happen and accepted that it was happening and let her become what she wanted to become. But you are exposing people to such risks and such risks that can only be chosen willfully by one person, the person who will undergo them. Speaker's Corner says, "As Pearl accepted your insemination offer, well, I have a very important announcement to make today, and I am very glad to say it. Pearl has not yet said no to my insemination offer, which is a standing offer up to December 2023. And so we are still in line with the plan. I believe that it's currently working in her mind. At first, she may think like, oh my God, a guy like this, random guy with a big Twitter account, but who the fuck is he? What she has to understand is we already have a child together. So this would merely be our second child. We already have Nick Fuentes, who is our child. the insemination offer is for a second child. James says, haha, I got baited. She hasn't said no. She hasn't rejected the offer. So the offer is still standing with all of the chances that it ever had. Let's be positive about this. A little theory of politics here. The Great Inversion. While liberalism used to be progressive, but now it is a conservative Gnostic trap, and why fascism must be tied to progress and actually addressing worker woes in a society. Historically, it was the case that fascism was tied to conservatism. Fascists wanted to maintain the status quo, which was very identity-oriented at the time, through implementing authoritarian controls. Meanwhile, progressives wanted to break down authoritarian controls and become free. Progressives used to be liberal, but this situation has inverted. In a way, progressive liberals won the war, and ironically, they are now in the position where fascists were, in that they want to maintain the status quo of liberalism through authoritarian control. Well, that is definitely what's happening. Now, I don't know if this guy is a leftist or a right winger, but if he's a leftist, it's good that leftists are starting to realize, hey, we're the fascists here. I hope that he's a leftist, because I think it's a realization that the leftists have great difficulty reaching. You saw them in the COVID stuff. They couldn't realize that, hey, what you were complaining about Hitler doing 2 or 3 years ago, you're now doing in full swing for vaccination here, like experimenting on people, forcing people to accept medical treatments they don't want. I mean, this was your root hate of everything fascist. And there you are doing it. Coco says, your superior seed would be in for an epic battle through miles of coal, JF. Yes, and I think that there we might call it a microchimeral treatment. To get Pearl's pussy to be reacquainted with the European biological dick tissue would be an achievement in and of itself, even if insemination was not to occur. That is my position. I was about to say as a doctor, but I'm not going to say it, because then they're going to go at me and they're going to say that I give a false health counseling. I don't want to be stuck like Jordan Peterson and have professional colleges going at me. No, this was just my opinion as JF, a guy who just happens to be a doctor, but in other parts of my life. Growing numbers of American volunteers wounded in Ukraine treated at U.S. Army hospital in Germany. So, of course, one of the other ways in which we fund Ukraine without it counting as dollar figures is we have all of these peripheral efforts around Ukraine. And now you have these American fighters, they go under the table as kind of mercenaries, and they get wounded, and now we still treat them like American soldiers. So it's like, oh, you were not a soldier of us on paper, but now that you're wounded, we're going to bring you back to our hospitals, and we end up paying for just as if we were invested in that war. Speaker's Corner says, JF, is there an optimal sex position that would have the best chance of insemination success with Pearl? I've been acquainted to the positioning question. And I've had my own experimentation with this across the years, and having successfully inseminated many women of very different shapes. I have concluded that there are basically two different types of women, and that the optimal insemination relies mostly on just this. So there is the woman who is 160 pounds or more. A woman who is 160 pounds or more, the positioning of the penis is not dramatically important. It just needs to be deep, and pretty much any position will work. You can detect the tip of the cervix with your finger and align yourself with the cervix, and it's going to work. What I found in very thin women, 100, maybe much less than 160 pounds, but generally thinner woman, everything is more tight, okay, in there. And what happens is that the cervix can be very much, you know, because if you have a relatively large hip woman, and I say large hip, but like anything within the normal weight up to fat woman, a large hip woman, there is some place between her dorsal sector and her ventral sector. Imagine that's a slice of her belly. And here you have the ass, and here you have the belly. The cervix is going to have plenty of space because there is a lot of biological tissue. Those are larger hips. So those are larger hips, so the cervix will be relatively central between the back and the front. Now, what happens in very thin women is that there is much less place for the cervix, and therefore the cervix isn't so central. The cervix becomes much closer to the ass and much more angled. We need illustrations. All right, well, I'm going to give you illustrations. So, all right. So the female body okay, and let's say there's a head here. Okay, so in a relatively fat woman or just normal weight, the cervix is going to be relatively central, and your penis, no matter where it comes from and the angle it comes from, is going to be pushed by a lot of tissue here that will center it, and a lot of tissue here that will center it like this. And so no matter what angle you come at, you come toward the fat woman, it's going to inject toward the cervix, and it's going to be fine. And the waves of our fat internals will actually push the sperm no matter what happens. It's all going to be good. Now, the problem with the very thin woman, and this is one of my favorite woman body shape, the very thin woman is faced with a problem. Let me cancel this here. The very thin woman has a cervix that is more anal. It is closer to her rectum. So you have the rectum for her to shit here. Let's say that her face is that way. So she's looking forward that way. The cervix, instead of being central here, is going to be very rectal and very angled. Like right now it's stemming out of her body, so it's not totally realistic, but it's really angled like this. And the problem is when you make love to these very thin women, your penis is arriving that way. So you're coming not in the direction of the cervix. The cervix is there. You should be coming in that angle, and you're coming instead in that angle. And the solution to it is doggy style sex, because your penis will have a little curve toward the up, and when you come, you're going to have a little curve. I would say that the angular moment of the human penis is about 82 degrees. That is, you are not coming straight, ventrally. That is not the direction in which you come. Your penis has a little curve, and the sperm as it comes shoots toward the up direction. So you're working with 82 degrees, and that 82 degrees align perfectly well if you come that way, but it aligns way too ventrally if you come that way. So in the end, if you have a woman who is extremely thin, doggy style is the way to go for optimal insemination. Thank you for this question. It's indeed a very important question. Fleur de Sel says, we need Pearl so you don't have to draw. Well, isn't Pearl a Catholic? She cannot do porn. I don't think she could accept doing porn. Chicago problem is crime. Chicago's problem is crime. The mayor's solution is city-run grocery stores. Walmart closed 4 stores. Whole Foods closed another, all due to theft, looting, and worker safety. Mayor Brendan Johnson said recently the city that used to work should consider opening government-run food stores because all Chicagoans deserve to live near convenient, affordable, healthy grocery options. And here we have the eternal cycle of Chicago, which is, I'm going to steal all this food. And now the companies are going out and they say, we can't survive with that much stealing. And then it's like, oh, well, why isn't there any food left? Well, it's because you stole it. And now the government comes in and puts fictitious corporations and city-run grocery stores, and then you steal from them. And so they are kicked again. Dino Legovic sends a super chat. He says, Dino is a good name for a baby. Baby Dino. Baby Dino. Baby Dino. Baby Dino. I don't know. I don't know. Baby Dino, it's time to change your diaper. I don't know. There's something Italian about it, and it feels kind of weird. As a last news item for tonight, Russia lifts the ban on low-quality DSL exports. On Monday, Russia tweaked its export limitations on fuels, lifting the temporary ban on exports of low-quality DSL and marine fuel. At the end of last week, Russia surprised the markets by announcing a temporary ban on exports of gasoline and diesel to stabilize fuel prices on the domestic market, ending weeks of speculation that authorities would limit exports in the face of soaring prices and shortages due to higher crude prices and weak Russian ruble. Fuel already accepted for export by Transneft and the Russian railways before last week's ban came into effect is also exempt from the restrictions, according to the government. But the export ban on all types of gasoline and on higher quality diesel remains in place per a government document cited by Reuters. The temporary restrictions will help raise supply on the fuel market, which in turn will reduce prices for consumers. So Russia dealing with domestic demand and needing some supplementary offer to be able to compensate for the rising prices. I think it's fine. They can do whatever they want. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.